Bring the House Transportation Committee to order. Present Representative Dugan, Salmon, Johnson, Fairclough, and Keller. Today, we are going over Southeast Region, and we are getting close to the end of these discussions for this year, for the committee's edification.
Mr. Chairman, is it true there's going to be a quiz at the end of this?
There will be a quiz.
I was worried about that.
Next week, we've got, I think Thursday, we've got the truckers coming in. We've got Linden and I think Carlisle and the ATA, and we're going to be talking about gas line stuff. Central Region or Northern Region will come in, I think, on Tuesday, and then we'll have another hearing with the Marine Highways. Then after that, we're going to start going over legislation. So just so the committee knows kind of where we're heading out in the next few weeks. Today we have Mal Menzies, who's the Southeast Regional Director, is going to be giving a presentation. Mal, you want to come on up? Introduce yourself and your position for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Malcolm Menzies. I'm a resident of Juneau, Alaska. I'm the Regional Director for Southeast Region, DOT, and PF. I had delivered for you prior to this meeting three documents. One, a simple outline for the Southeast Region, what we are, where we are, what we do. And the other two documents are summaries of our construction projects for 2007-2008 and a summary of our design projects for 2007-2008. If you would, Mr. Chairman, I'll go over these real quickly for you.
Yeah, Mal, what we've been doing is just kind of what we did with the other region was just so everybody from other parts of the state can understand kind of what's happening down in Southeast. And just go ahead.
All right.
We'll interrupt for questions along the way.
Well, please do, sir. In the PowerPoint document that I don't have an overhead for, I try to simply tell you what Southeast Region is. And the first page of that document is the traditional map of Alaska and the rest of the United States. How everybody points out that Alaska is twice as big as Texas. Well, if you look at this map closely, the northern region of DOT is twice the size of Texas almost. And the southern region, I'm proud to point out, is bigger than the state of Florida. So that's always a nice thing to me. That map amplifies it. The next two pages actually show the management team of DOT. If you look at them, the management team is all along long-time DOT employees. Chuck Gray, over 27 years state service. Jack Beadle, almost 30 years of state service, ready to retire. Andy Hughes, our regional planner. He's had something like 33 years of state service. Greg Patz, retired lieutenant colonel of the Army, has 10 years of state service. And then there's two special individuals we have here that I brought with me in case there's questions on special projects that Southeast Region has, and that's Jim Lowell, a project engineering manager for Gravina Access, and Ruben Yost, project environmental manager for Juneau Access. Our youngest management authority is Janelle White, who is both an engineer and has a master's in business administration. One of the bigger things in Southeast Region that we're small and very proud of is all our maintenance stations throughout Southeast Alaska. They're the ones that they show us the best. They are our face throughout the communities of all of Southeast Alaska. So I give a summary of all the maintenance stations, starting with Yakutat, our most northerly, and going down as far as Prince of Wales and Ketchikan, our southern ones. We do not have a maintenance station in Metlakatla. And you can go through all the maintenance stations. I list all the major equipment and all the employees that we had there and the foremen and their numbers, et cetera, if you want to talk to any of them. Finally, going to DOT in general, I describe DOT in general, how many employees there are, approximately 3,000, of which the Southeast Region has 245, or about 8%. And if you look at Alaska in total, you'll find that Southeast Alaska is generally 6 to 10% of all of Alaska, population-wise, geographic-wise, and mileage-wise, bridge-wise, and building-wise. So we constitute about 6 to 10% of the workforce in that. What we do, though, is approximately 11 to 22% of the contractual work throughout Alaska. We're very proud of that. We do led a lot of contracts for our highways, our airports, and our facilities throughout Southeast Alaska. We use the private sector enough, and this, the final page is our summary of what we do and how much work we do dollar-wise throughout the state of Alaska and Southeast region. Then the final two pages, one thing that most people are surprised about is that we work other than Southeast Alaska. We work in all the ports of Alaska that our Alaska Marine Highway System enters. We do all the shore facilities for them engineering-wise, and we help out with the maintenance-wise. So we work very closely with the Alaska Marine Highway System. And finally, if you don't know, we are located at 7 Mile, and all of you are welcome to visit us at any time. Our maintenance facilities are there, our pre-construction facilities are there, and our design facilities are there. The other two booklets relate to construction and design for all the projects in the next this year and next year in southeastern Alaska. And rather than go over it in total, just the first two pages in each booklet, I list the communities that we are working in presently, the number of projects we have in these communities, the type of projects that we have in these communities, and finally the total amount of work that we're doing in southeast Alaska within these communities, within the subdivisions of highways, airfields, aviation, marine, and facilities. You'll note that the sister child for southeast Alaska is facilities. We do not have many buildings for southeast. Very, very quickly, for construction in southeast Alaska, we're going to work this 2 years in 9 communities. We'll have 37 different projects worth $216 million worth of value for highway work alone. Aviation work, we'll work in 6 different southeastern communities on 7 projects with $106 million worth of work. And that work is federal aviation work, while the highway work is FHWA work, of course. Then the Alaska Marine Highway System, we'll be working on shore facilities in 9 communities, not all of which are southeastern Alaska, some are southwest. And we'll have 12 projects worth $70 million. And in facilities, we have 7 projects and 7 communities worth almost $8 million.
Representative Dugan had a question.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mal, these are the construction. By construction projects, sure, I take it you mean things people are going to be working on this next construction season?
Yes, through the chair. Yes, sir. This construction season, 2007 and 2008.
Okay.
Some of these projects are ongoing. We have several projects that have been 2-year projects in southeast Alaska or 3-year, and we'll be working on those also.
Mr. Chairman, and typically, if there is a typical situation here, these projects that are now going to be worked on in the upcoming construction season, when would they have been authorized?
Well, they would have been authorized as late as this year, a month or 2 months ago, but generally speaking, last year they would have been authorized and bid.
So you're generally working on a authorization 1 year, construction
next year.
Schedule.
Mm-hmm. Some of the projects go out in the spring, summer of the year, but we try to make the projects come out in the fall, winter, so contractors are ready in the summer, spring, summer of the year to do work.
Okay. Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very briefly, the design booklet is very similar to that. Projects are very similar throughout southeast Alaska. It's trying to show that we do work in all the communities, and it's ongoing evaluation. We do have the 2 special projects in southeastern Alaska that I call special projects. That's Gravina Access and Juneau Access. And then we, like other areas of the state, we have a need for pavement money, all types of pavement money. Asphalt wears out quickly. With that, that's as brief as I choose to be at this time. I welcome any questions you have, and if I cannot answer them, I will refer to, if you allow me to refer to Mr. Yost or Mr. Lowell on those particular projects.
We might be out of here early today, guys. Any questions for Mr. Menzies? We're adjourned. No. And well, because I know we have a lot of work to do, and it's always nice to wrap up a meeting early and give a little extra time for members. But Representative Johnson,
not so quick.
Not so.
I'm wondering about the efficiencies of managing all the way down the Aleutians out of Juneau. Do you actually send people from here? Can you tell me? Is it design? Are the contracts let out of here? Can you talk to me a little bit about how that works? I understand the expertise and all that. So can you kind of tell me why that wouldn't be stationed someplace a little more central to the work?
Well, it's stationed here because the Alaska Marine Highway System is stationed here. Our headquarters are stationed here. And this division, and it's a structural division for design principally, had its beginning with the old Harbors and Waters, Harbors and Docks portion of the old Department of Public Works facility. They grew out of that. We have been working very closely with the Alaska Marine Highway System on their onshore facilities almost since the creation. I would say since the creation, except for some projects go to consultants. We do send individuals out to meet with communities, to meet with the captains, to meet with the crew, to discuss the locations for vessel ports and we do send our construction staff out there to overview construction of these facilities. We work very closely with marine contractors on that. If it is more economical for the state on construction projects, we sometimes borrow individuals from Central Region to work on these coastal projects out in the area. But to date, the majority of the projects have been handled strictly by Southeast Region personnel, both in the design and in the construction field.
If I could, sure. Well, are you the only division that designs ports? I mean, all the ports I know that we've done, and I'll just take Seward because it's one I'm familiar with. Was DOT involved in the design of that, or is there a unique skill set that you have, or is it just
the unique skill set? Is excuse me, sir, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Johnson. These unique skill sets are with the Alaska Marine Highway System. The Ports and Harbors Division of the DOT right now is, in summary, three people, one in Juneau and two in Central Region. So a harbor such as in Seward or a harbor such as in Kodiak, the expertise would come out of Central Region for the harbors. Our expertise that we provide, for the most part, are related to the Alaska Marine Highway System and their ports.
If I could go, could you just take, for example, Kodiak? For $12 million. Would you just kind of walk through that project and tell me what it is and just...
Okay, that is a project for a new site selection of the Alaska Marine Highway terminal there in Kodiak. We're working very closely with city management there and the city government to locate a good terminal facility, good port facility, and secondly, to design it. There's been several public meetings, several government-to-government meetings DOT with the local government, and we're leasing land, I believe, in that particular instance from the city, and we're designing a port especially for the ferries that provide service to that community. That project is scheduled to come out, I believe, sometime this summer fall for construction. Right now the design team is here in Juneau, and there's been meetings both in Kodiak and meetings here with Kodiak people here in Juneau while they were visiting the legislature and things like that on the project. And that is typical of these projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I had Representative Faircloth and then Salmon.
I serve on another committee of this House resources, and one of the issues that came before us is our susceptibility to invasive and noxious weeds coming across our borders. And since we have the time, some of us here, I hope two of us here at least, were wondering about DOT and in your side of your contract management, seeing that you're so close to borders in some of your to the Canadian border as well as your coastline, how we are ensuring that we don't have species being carried across a continent or across a different country into ours. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes, I do. And I don't know that I can answer that except in very generalities. Maybe Mr. Yost could help me a little bit. He's worked in the environmental section. But there is a list of invasive species. We have had problems in Southeast with invasive species on our highways, mainly around such things as guardrail and things like that, where we have to do control over this life form that has developed, I guess you would say. We watch out for equipment coming in from Canada that may carry this plant life with it that works on our projects. We have a stipulation on that to watch out for that. There is care taken by our environmental section, and I'm not really up to total speed on the different procedures that are used. Perhaps Mr. Yost.
Mr. Yost, do you have something you can add? If you'd identify yourself, come on up so the mics can pick you up and identify yourself and your position for the record, please.
My name is Ruben Yost. I'm the Special Projects Manager for Southeast Region working on Juneau Access, but prior to that I was the Regional Environmental Coordinator for 4 years, and we have several procedures that we follow to try and reduce the possibility of spread of invasive plants. On any project, during the design, we go out and evaluate for the presence of any invasive species, so that if we're actually going to be disturbing dirt in that area, we will isolate that dirt. It'll be taken in, and generally it'll be burned, the soil, before it's placed anywhere else. Once we identify an area as containing an invasive species, that soil from that area can't be moved to another part of the project. We use certified seed mixes, which come from that are certified by the Plant Materials Center. I believe it's just outside of Seward. We, as Director Menzies mentioned, on most projects where there's concern, we have a stipulation that any equipment that's coming in has to be steam cleaned. We generally do not allow soil to be imported from beyond the general area where the project will take place. We at one time had problems with the materials coming from Canada. The biggest part of the problem that we don't have a handle on now is seed that can come in on vehicles, on hikers' shoes. But any time we're moving dirt, we have stipulations to make sure that the dirt is not contaminated so that we don't spread from one area to the other. And under federal highways, we have a responsibility on a project. If we have identified that there are already invasive species there, that as part of the project, we remove those species.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, what we heard in House Resource was that these particular noxious and invasive weeds can actually clog streams to block salmon spawning and a multitude of other issues. And so I'm not sure if we've asked DOT to comment on the legislation that's before us, but it does have some serious ramifications for the ecosystem for Alaska. And so we would be interested to, I'd like to know more of what you're doing to prevent cross-contamination per se. And any suggestions you might have for the hiking shoes or, you know, I'm not sure how, if you went across the territory before, pun intended, it would be nice to not pick up those seeds.
Mr. Yost, maybe you would have direction of someone, or Mary could find someone from DOT that may be invited to the next bill hearing to address that from DOT's perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You could do that for Representative Fairclough. Representative Salmon.
Under your blue book?
Sir.
Yeah, under the highway, under Juneau, there's $108 million. What's that project for?
That if you go into Mr. Chairman, Mr. Salmon, Representative Salmon, if you go into the book, there's a listing of all the projects on page 9. They start page 10. Let's see, page 11. All the Juneau project starts and. It starts out with the project at Sunny Point. I'm sure you and the others on your committee have driven through our Sunny Point project. That's one of our big projects. But the bulk of the money, if you see on the bottom of the footnote, it includes $77 million for the project known as Juneau Access or the Lynn Canal Highway. That is a project that we're hoping to bid within the next several months.
Is that on page 11?
That project is on page, that project starts on page 12, under Juneau Link Canal Highway Phase 1.
Okay. And that's what the 108 is for, or that's separate money for that?
It's money within the 108. The 108 is a sum of nine different projects in the highway field in the Juneau area.
Mm-hmm.
And the total Juneau Access has a total of $77 million within that funding part. All the rest are other projects within the area.
And those are identified, I think, as Juneau Lynn Canal Highway Phase 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Page 12. You have a follow-up, Representative Salmon?
Yeah. I just wanted you to kind of explain where are we at on the phases now. I mean, where we're at money-wise and where we're at on, you know, what's holding the situation up. I just want to basically know. And, you know, you hear throughout the building a lot of different version, you know, but I want to hear it straight from the man that's sitting ahead of it, you know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solomon, on Juneau Access Project, that's a project that's been worked on for a multiple number of years. I've, as an individual, first worked on that project in 1964, so that's how long it's been around. But right now, where we're at that project, we're very close to reaching our Corps of Engineer permit, which is the final permit for the roadway construction. We have received a draft copy of the permit conditions for our Corps of Engineers permit, and we have reviewed that and made comments back to the Corps. To the best of our knowledge, the Corps is right now reviewing their draft and our requested revisions to their draft with their legal department and the Justice Department of the United States. The permit will then go for a final review to EPA prior to being issued. Colonel Wilson of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was down here in Juneau last week speaking at the chamber. When asked the question, where is that permit at this point in time, he said it's soon to be released. And soon, whether that's weeks or months, he wouldn't say, but he said it's soon. It's our belief that it will be released in approximately a month.
Follow up.
Okay. With that said, we're in the permit. After the permit is done, then what takes place after that? I mean, how far are we getting on this? Are we going to complete it? And what time frame are we looking at?
We're not going to complete it in a short time frame. The project has just had its second annual financial review that's gone for the Federal Highway Administration. We are set to release a project out to bid within weeks of obtaining the Corps of Engineers permit. We will release first a 5-mile project and then perhaps later a 15-mile project. The overall project, Juneau Access, Juneau, the end of existing Glacier Highway to the Castaheen River, will have a project time limit of 10 to 12 years to construct. It'll be constructed over a relatively long point of time. We have approximately $80 million towards that project right now. The project total construction cost at this time will be $350 million, and it will be funded through the normal STIP process of the departments. So it'll be a long-term project, a long-term to develop project, but it will go forward in that manner.
Thank you.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a few questions about this project myself. But I want to first try to understand it in the context of the Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan, which has been explained to me as more road miles, fewer ferry miles. Is that a fair summary of what the plan says?
The Southeast Transportation Plan is a plan of roadway systems and ferry systems, yes, sir.
Right, but the idea is you build more road, you don't, the ferries.
And less ferries,
right,
sir.
And when was that finished?
The Southeast Transportation Plan.
Yeah.
It was done in 2004.
So the Juneau Access Road is a part of that.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And how much more road construction is there in that plan?
In the total plan, sir?
Yeah.
Well, I can't give you an exact number, but by memory, the Juneau Access, Lynn Canal Highway is 50 miles of road system. Mm-hmm. We'll reduce approximately 65 miles of ferry route. We will be building the Petersburg Cake to Highway, which will be approximately 54 miles of road, and that will reduce our ferry service, our mainline service, and allow shuttles. There are other projects involved that may or may not go, but the Bradfield Canal project was a project that will not go. Sitka Access probably will go at some point in time in the future. There's projects called for going north out of Ketchikan, and there's projects going south out of Cake to Prince of Wales Island with a short ferry run. The Southeast Transportation Plan incorporates both the Alaska Marine Highway Ferry System as well as the Island Ferry Authority on Prince of Wales, and they're all joined together to make more roads and less ferry runs, so it'll be a little bit faster travel through Southeast Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I imagine that building this road system is going to change the requirements for the ferry fleet in some ways. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct, sir.
And you're coordinating that with the Marine Highway System?
Mr. Chairman, yes. That right now there's the master plan going on to the going on for the Alaska Marine Highway System ferry route. Our regional planner is working with the Alaska Marine Highway System on that plan. When that plan nears formation, finalized, we will start to update the Southeast Transportation Plan, per se.
Okay. So at some point, as this goes forward, if it goes forward, we would expect that the requirements for the ferry fleet would change, and that the Marine Highway System would be coming back to us, I guess, because it doesn't look like the federal government really likes to pay for ferries, as near as I can tell from the testimony so far, to make those changes in the ferry fleet. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir, that is correct. In the Southeast Transportation Plan is basically we have our main fleet yet, but mm-hmm. the main fleet would be reduced to some shuttle fleet, and the plan would come back to you.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I might, has anybody put a price tag on all these changes?
Mr. Chairman, no, sir. The price tag has not been put on these changes. The price tag has been put on the road systems in that plant system. The price tag has not been put on the Alaska Marine Highway System as yet.
And what would the price tag on the road system?
I'm sorry. I'll have to get back with you, sir, on that. I don't know what the price tag is.
You reckon it would stop my heart when I see it?
It probably would, sir.
If I might. Back to the Juneau Access Road, then. So the idea here is to build a road to get closer to what comes first, Haines or Skagway on that route? I can never remember. Haines. So we'd still be driving, people who wanted to get from Juneau to Haines would still be driving. They'd be driving farther and on the ferry for a shorter period of time. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir. There would be 50 miles of additional road from the end of the existing road to the Cassahine River, at which time there will be a short shuttle ferry to Haines and also a short shuttle ferry to Skagway. That is the end of the current project. When that project reaches its terminus and is fully constructed, it is the department's hope to have a second project that will hard link us all the way to Skagway and the National Highway System.
And if I remember correctly, that part of the project is the project that ran into the federal government at some point? That there's land there they don't want you putting a road across. Am I right about that?
Mr. Chairman, yes, you are correct. There's viewshed land that the National Park Service had some difficulty in allowing us. It meets a certain specific section within the Transportation Act that stops us if there's another choice. It is not actually in the park. It is in the viewplane of the park.
And on the part now that isn't involved in that, but just sort of the first, would you say, 50 miles of it, when it's complete, what are we going to have there? I noticed that, for instance, the description of some of these early phases describes a two-lane gravel road. Is that what we're going to end up with, which is 50 miles of two-lane gravel road?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we will end up with a two-lane paved highway there. There will be a maintenance station at a point that is now called Common. It's a mining facility now that we have worked with to eventually obtain a maintenance station. We will have a ferry terminal at the Castaheen River, and that will be a ferry terminal that will service two shuttle-type ferries going to Haines and to Skagway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there an estimate for the annual maintenance cost of the road once it's built? I understand that there are people who are concerned that snow is going to, like, come tumbling down there quite often.
Mr. Chairman, yes, there is a maintenance cost within the environmental statement. The maintenance cost is very similar to the maintenance cost of our Klondike Highway, of Thompson Pass, and the Brooks Range Highways and things like that. I cannot, off the top of my head, tell you what that figure is, but it's based on other similar roads and other similar snow difficulties the department has in winter maintenance on roads.
Okay. Just one more, Mr. Chairman, I promise. The total here, if I heard you correctly, said there's about $80 million committed to this project.
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir.
The total here is roughly that. It's $77 million for the first three phases. What have we got at the end of this if we don't put any more money in it? Where are we then?
Mr. Chairman, we have a road with bridges leaving the present terminus of Glacier Highway and going in a northerly direction to a point very near or at the Comet Mine,
but
which is about 30-35 miles north of the end of the existing highway.
And is that a point where a guy could drive a car onto a ferry?
Not at that point, sir. There is a area in a cove called Slate Creek Cove that the Kensington Mine was going to put and has put a port facility. We also, in our environmental statement, have a marine highway terminal facility, a temporary highway terminal facility in this cove for a temporary shortage of the highway.
And how far from the end of this construction project would that be?
At the end of this project, that Slate Creek Cove is located at about 20 miles past the present end of Glacier Highway, or about 30 miles this side of the terminus of Castaheen Roadway, 30 to 40 miles.
I'm sorry, I didn't ask that question correctly, Mr. Chairman. If we just build the phases that are in front of us here, just hypothetically, how much extra road are we going to have at the end? You get to the ferry terminal, how much more road will we have built that may be scenic but doesn't help you get to Haines?
Mr. Chairman, we would have an additional 30 miles of road, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
You're not. I'm still not doing this right. I'm talking about if you just spend the $77 million bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So you build a certain amount of the road. You said that doesn't get us the whole 50 miles. It only gets us a certain amount.
Approximately 20 miles, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Right. So are we pretty near the end of that 20 miles at this temporary ferry terminal site that you were just discussing?
We're past the end of the temporary ferry terminal site with this construction. The Point Comet is about 8 miles past the Slate Creek Cove temporary ferry terminal.
The terminal site that he's talking about is the temporary one for access to Kensington Mine, not the terminal space that you're talking about
right, to
Haines.
I'm sorry. What I'm trying to ask is this question. If we just build the first three sections, where along those sections could we build a terminal to put cars on a ferry if we decide not to build the rest of the road?
Mr. Chairman, at Slate Creek Cove, which is about mile 15 or so, that is where we could construct one. There was in
okay.
The environmental statement, there was at Sawmill Creek and there was at Slate Creek Cove.
So Slate Creek, and then there'd be an extra 5 miles of road, basically.
Gotcha.
Okay. I'm sorry that took so long to ask properly, Mr. Chairman.
You have a follow-up?
No, I think I'll let somebody else talk for a while. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Salmon, is it on the Juneau Access?
Yeah.
Just quickly.
Same. I have another question. I've been to Berners Bay here a couple years ago, and I noticed there's a long ways around. Are you going straight across or around?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Salmon, we're you could say we're going in between. We're going into the bay, into Berners Bay, into the uplands portion of Berners Bay, just a little bit past the main tidal zone of Berners Bay, and we're covering, crossing Berners Bay with two very large bridges at the Lace and Antler Rivers. The bridges are each about half a mile long.
Representative Faircloth.
If Mr. If Representative Dugan has a follow-up on that, I'm happy to wait.
You're off Juneau Access.
I'm still on Juneau Access. We've heard testimony in the committee that, rightly or wrongly, that certain large projects force other projects out of the running for money. This looks like, the Juneau Access Road sounds like a pretty big project. So what other Southeast projects or statewide projects are likely to be affected by the demand that this project has for funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, we think that with our financial plan, we have outlined a project in a mannerism that it will not do away with any other projects. It will be, work jointly with the other needs of both Southeast and Interior Alaska.
So you don't expect there's going to be any contest for funds with, say, highway to highway in Anchorage?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, no, there always will be a contest for funds, but I don't think there will be a contest that will hurt anybody for funds. We have planned this road and planned the financial plan to work within the STIP in all cases.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
How, Mal, how is the estimated cost of the road changed? I know every time we talk about a project in this committee, and every time I get on the phone and call the commissioner and ask him about projects, it's always, everything's so much more expensive. It's a tune we've heard in this committee all session long. How has the project cost for the Juneau Access changed in the last, you said we just got another fiscal analysis. Is it the same 40, 50, 60% that we hear about every other project, or is this one unique where the price hasn't gone up that much?
The price tag, Mr. Chairman, the price tag has gone up at least 30%, if not 40% on this project. The price tag right now is, construction cost price is $350 million. We have $24 million into this project right now to complete it. So this, like all other projects throughout the state, the costs are rising. We tried to inflation-proof this project not too long ago by acquiring certain culvert pipe conduits and certain piling that will be used on this project. So there is some minor inflation-proofing of the project, but generally speaking, it has risen as other projects have throughout the state of Alaska.
Anything else on Juneau Access, or should we move on to another?
Mr. Chairman, mine.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mine has to do with access, but more southeast and coastal communities all the way around. As we continue conversations about wanting to have a healthy ferry system and provide transportation and access to those communities, at a federal level, we can't lose sight of what they're talking about in the reauthorization bill that's coming before us. And one of those things is greenhouse gases. And there is, politicians can be, have some humor in what they do. And so we used to call it ICE-T when I originally started talking about federal funding. And then it was T21, and this year it's Safety Lou, trying to think about people's lives and keeping communities safe. Well, the next one coming up is possibly labeled Green T. For greenhouse gases, but with a high look at output of emissions. And one of the challenges that we will have as we go in, and rightfully DOT is looking at this right now, is how much emissions are coming out of our ferry system versus use on a road lane mile. And so another consideration as we look long-term into laying asphalt down versus operating a ferry system in that investment is the actual carbon emissions and the gases that are going to come off of that. So I just would throw that out as additional dialogue when we talk about slowing down a project where we might want to continue to invest in our ferry system versus creating a long-term usable link that travelers can use at their discretion versus waiting for a scheduled trip in between. And that said, as I understand it, it's at least a 1-to-3 ratio that a car is actually producing lower carbon emissions than the current ferry system is. So as we look at those conversation, I would just throw that into the mix. And please, I'm stand ready to be corrected on the emissions portions of this.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said that the projects was $350 million. Is that did I hear that right?
Yes, sir, I did.
We're 24 in. We have 77 here. What is the extra $250 million buy us?
Mr. Chairman, the extra $250 million comes through our normal STIP process, our normal process.
I understand where it gets, but what do we get for that? What are we going to have at the end of the day when we spend that $250 million? A road? Is that the road all the way to Skagway? What is that $350 million? What does that buy us?
Mr. Chairman, that'll buy us a road all the way to the Cassaheen River. It'll buy us a ferry terminal at the terminus of the road at the Cassaheen River, a ferry terminal that has to be there regardless of whether we go on to Skagway or we terminate the job there. That'll buy us three ferry boats and improve the ferry terminals in Haines and Skagway. The road will be a two-lane road. It'll be a paved road at the end of the day. It will have passing lanes in it. It will have scenic pullouts in it. And generally speaking, it'll be a nice highway for Southeast Alaska and a good access to our capital.
So I guess in follow-up to Representative Dugan's question, there's some planning for some boats in right. this. That's where I thought the answer was no. When
that's what I thought too.
And so I just wanted to clarify what we got there.
I'm sorry if I didn't make that.
I was confused as well.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seemed like an awful lot of money for just a little bit higher.
Right.
Go ahead.
Representative Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, and just to follow up, I believe that those are different kinds of boats than we're currently running. They're more of a shuttle service that would have lower carbon emissions than the current ferry system that runs for longer times. And the cost to administer those particular shuttle-type services would be different than what is currently being paid for under the current system. And please add to that or correct me if...
Mr. Chairman, yes, the ferry on these terminals will be more... in design of the Island Ferry Authority, smaller boats, smaller crewed boats, and day boats typically.
And did you have something?
Just one more question. I noticed here that it said that at the end of $350 million, we'd have 50 miles of road and a 65-mile ferry ride. What is there an estimate for the cost for the rest of the road, picking up from there and just going all the way to Skagway or Haines or wherever the heck we're going there?
There was a cost in the initial environmental, and Mr. Chairman, if I may, there was a cost in the initial environmental impact statement for going all the way. It's called alternate 2, I believe it is. If I may, Mr. Yost may have that cost from over.
It was approximately $70 million in $4. We haven't updated that alternative because we're not currently pursuing it.
Could you come up to the microphone for the recorders in the back, please? I'm sorry.
My name is Ruben Yost, as I mentioned, Mr. Chairman and Representative Dugan. In the draft EIS, we did evaluate an alternative that constructed highway all the way to Skagway, and that portion was approximately $70 million in 04 dollars. We have not updated that cost to 07 dollars. I would like to correct one thing that Director Menzies said. We already have 40 miles of road north out of Juneau. We would build 50 additional miles of road so that from Juneau to there would be approximately 90 miles, and we would be actually removing about approximately 100 miles of ferry because the ferry first has to go out and around Shelter Island and out of Auk Bay. So you, if you combine those two, in other words, it's 13 miles from downtown Juneau to Auk Bay, you currently drive that, then you travel the ferry distance up to Haines and Skagway. In this case, you would be driving the 90 miles, and then you would have approximately a 7-mile shuttle to Haines and a 15-mile shuttle to Skagway. So those boats can turn around on a regular basis. We estimate there would be 8 round trips per day to Haines and 6 to Skagway.
And so the reason it's $70 million even in '04 dollars, is it's only 15 miles of road that you...
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. I was wondering why it was so much cheaper for that last stretch.
Spilled it.
Yeah, right. Let's start from the other end.
Thank you, Mr. Yost. And I think, you know, we've been trying to get the Southeast Transportation Plan going, and what it does call for, as we've talked about, is more roads and smaller dayboat shuttle ferries, which I think heads down the line of some of the colleagues on this panel who have a real concern about the operating cost of the Marine Highway System. Can you talk about the challenges that you face? You're an old road builder from the old days. What are the practical challenges of implementing this plan to get these roads built in an area that is dominated by federal ownership of a lot of the land? Can you tell us how? Because it seems like we've been talking about this a long time, and I think a lot of us who live down here in Southeast are open-minded and understand the concern that folks have outside of our districts that don't live on the coast with the Marine Highway System as it stands today. But what are some of the practical challenges of building roads and getting this stuff done? I mean, I want to get it done. I know my colleagues who have a keen eye on the bottom line of the budget want to get it done. What are some of the real challenges of doing that?
Well, you can start off first with the real challenge of availability of land, the right-of-way. Most of the land, of course, in southeastern Alaska is all federally owned, or very much so federally owned. Lots of it is Alaska Native Corporation owned, but we still have to acquire right-of-way in the most part. So that is a challenge. That challenge is being met with a part of safety lieu that has occurred, what's called reciprocal easements. We're going to be obtaining right-of-ways throughout Southeast Alaska, both for roadways and for transmission lines throughout Alaska. Second challenge that we have is the environmental challenge. As a very personal view, the environmental challenge to me is bigger than the right-of-way challenge. It is the challenge that we live in a rainforest. We live in predominantly wetlands. So almost everywhere we look to build a road, we have to have one type or another of a permit. And these permits take time. There is the NEPA process that takes an awful, extraordinary amount of time. Gravina Access was started in 88, and the NEPA process ended in 2003 or 2004. The Juneau Access was restarted again in the mid-late 90s, and that process just ended approximately a year and a half ago when we applied for the permits for there's several type of permits. There's the coastal permit for our own DNR, now going back to Fish and Game. That is one length of time that can take anywhere from 90 days to several years. The Corps of Engineer permit, although the Corps of Engineers say, generally speaking, these permits can be issued in 90 to 120 days. For both of these large access projects, the permits have been over 2 years. The final challenge is just our terrain, our topography, and the construction that goes into that terrain and topography. The construction is probably the easiest of all. We've built road, the Klondike Highway. That was a highway of mountainous terrain, big boulders, steep drainages. The Haines Highway is the same. When they built the pipeline highway, I was fortunate to work on that in the late 60s, early 70s, and that was a challenge in its own right, mainly because of its arctic conditions. Down here, we have the rainforest conditions. That's the biggest challenge for us. Those are the challenges that I see, first of all.
And because we are in the Tongass National Forest, which has been really a fundraising tool for many environmental groups across the country, because it's categorized and characterized as the last jewel of rainforest in the world. You know, I think there's about 10 of them that I've seen described as the last rainforest in the world. But how does the
interaction of environmental groups and their lawsuits. Do you deal with that on permitting projects and roads?
Well, we deal with that in the southeast region on a daily basis. Right now, Mr. Yost could describe the legal process that we're in with a group of, I believe it's six conservation groups.
Correct.
Six conservation groups have joined into, they have sued, the Forest Service and the Corps of Engineers over the permit, the permitting of the Juneau access. That suit has been going on for about a year and a half right now. It is scheduled, I believe, to be heard before the courts this June. It's a delaying process. They sue over a number of things, and you have to sort out each thing one by one in order to overcome this procedure. Right now, they're suing over the NEPA process per se. It is point of fact that these same conservation groups will probably sue again when we go to bid for Juneau access. It's just one of the things that we expect. We hope it doesn't happen, but we expect it very much to happen.
I guess what I'm getting at by trying to put all these things on the table is for everybody to understand that I think a lot of the support getting the Southeast Transportation Plan done, the challenges of getting there are many and rather large. So like I told Senator Wilken in our first meeting when we had a joint meeting with the Senate last year, when he was very detailed questioning about the Green Highway and the operations and the cost, et cetera, et cetera. I welcome his help and support and all the members on this panel's help and support in getting over those obstacles, which will lead to, as you said before, more roads, a different ferry system. And this is difficult for me to say because, you know, I'm from Ketchikan. My dad worked on the ferries for 30 years, and he loves those big old mainliners, and a lot of people do. But the reality is times are changing, and I would welcome all of your support. I know you're all very interested for various different reasons, but I hope you understand the challenges, and I look for your support in implementing that plan with a different ferries and adding as many roads as we can to lessen the burden on that general fund that I know specifically two members are extremely concerned about, and I know all of you are concerned, but maybe a little bit less concerned. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Coming from a more urban area, we talk about moving the capital, and sometimes with not as much sensitivity for what that might do to the Juneau economy. And when I look at the Juneau Access Road, I have to, when people are opposing it, I just put this on the record for in support of what you said, Mr. Chairman, that as we don't allow roads to be built, the clamor continues to happen, at least in urban Anchorage in that area, to say that we want access to our capital. And individuals want to be able to drive to the capital and not, even if it costs $350 to put the gas to drive down, we are independent people who like the opportunity to pull up at a gas station and choose to go down versus booking a ticket on Alaska Airlines or any other carrier to get us here. And so I do support you in trying to put a road connection through together and as preservationists versus environmentalists, because I know there are many that might disagree that I'm not an environmentalist, but I really feel like I'm an environmentalist. When I first started into government, it was solely to protect my community and the way people were developing it recklessly on small lot sizes. And if you actually followed that case history, was able to implement minor changes to help that. So I consider myself very environmentally friendly, but I'm not a preservationist at all costs. I think that that there are reasons to chop down a few trees so that we can acquire access, as the chairman said. And I just want to raise the ante just a bit that as we continue to preclude and litigate against road connections to communities, that we jeopardize local economies in being able to move forward and grow to their fullest potential too. And so, you know, I sympathize with those who want to continue to make sure that their community remains exactly the same or the same as they believe it, and then those that want from other areas to be able to have access in because it's something that we value and love too, and we want to be part of that. So I just throw that the capital move is part of connecting Alaska, and I know that's not what's on our table today, Mr. Chairman, but when we start talking about Juneau access, it becomes elevated in my mind. Thank you.
Linda Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The access road, what is the completion date? If we were to start in 12 months and we get everything done, how long would it be before we can actually take that first car that was 11 miles? What are we talking about?
Representative, you mean the 50 miles to the Castaheen from Juneau?
Well, whatever it is to get the first car on the ferry to Haines down the road.
At this point in time, between 10 and 12 years.
Okay. And we're going to be replacing some ferries.
Yes, sir.
So what are we doing to bridge that 10 or 12 years with our existing fleet? Are we just trying to wear them out and get 10 years out of it? Are there plans to, because eventually if we're connected with the road to road, we're talking a totally, you know, paradigm shift. But for the next 10 or 12 years, we have what we have. So what is being looked at as a bridge for those 10 years in terms of the ferries, the actual boats and the system that we have now?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, it's my perception that we are working together with the Alaska Marine Highway System. This year, the ferry schedule that just came out puts the Malaspina as the day boat for the Lynn Canal system. That boat has been used as a day boat in the past. It has a life beyond the 10 to 12 years that we're looking at here. When I say that the road would be 10 to 12 years, that is what we believe at this point is the maximum time. We can build that road shorter if the funds are made available. We're thinking of the most conservative way. But we are working hand in hand with the Alaska Marine Highway System as to their aging fleet and our need for a road and shortening. And we have been in joint meetings talking about the shuttle ferries that we have planned for the Juneau Access Project and elsewhere in southeastern Alaska.
And I guess what I want to do is, and I know it's not a red flag because I think people are thinking about it, but I'd hate to have a road built in 10 and our ferry system age out at 7.
Yes.
So, you know, just somewhere we need to be looking at where there's a merger of these two projects so that we can hopefully integrate so we don't have situations where we cut much needed service to communities and so that we can transition smoothly and we don't have to run huge boats as day boats inefficiently and start looking in those terms. And I think I heard your answer is that you're already in the process of doing that.
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir, we are in the process of doing that. That the master plan that I spoke of that the Alaska Marine Highway System is working on is being worked with both our region and the Alaska Marine Highway System, and the long-term overview of that system and the shortening of the ferry routes and the lengthening of the roads is all part of the planning that is going on at this point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So that's the left hand, and we'll have the right hand up here.
That's true. We'll see
in
what
a couple
say,
weeks,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure Mary's back there furiously scribbling notes. Representative Dugan.
I was impressed, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Menzies, by your statement that the road building challenges of the Juneau Access Road are at the bottom of your list of challenges. When I was a much younger man, I built roads, by which I mean I operated an idiot stick on a paving crew. And just casting an eye over the terrain that I can see from the deck as you go between here and Haines, it impresses me that you've got quite an engineering challenge in front of you to get that baby built. So I'm assuming that because there's been a lot of flack in the air about this and you've had plenty of occasion to look at your whole card on this project, that you're confident that you can engineer and build it and keep it open when you're done. Is that a fair assumption?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, yes, that is a fair assumption. I was fortunate enough as a young person to work on many of the roads in southeastern Alaska and the interior. The construction of this road is not unlike a lot of these roads. The Klondike Highway, for one, was a mountainous highway, although away from the coast, it had the same rock and boulder and avalanche concerns. I was fortunate enough to work in the Brooks Range. I was fortunate enough to work on the Seward Highway. We have taken many groups on helicopter and boat tours of this roadway, and of course, all of us look at it as a challenge, but it's a buildable challenge in the civil engineering field. My father was a logger, and during the war, he became a CB. And I've always, as an engineer, liked the model of the CBs can do. And I think this is a can-do road.
Good. But you're not going to be engineering from the seat of the bulldozer the way the CBs did,
I hope. But I had done that, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Faircloth, do you have a question? Anything else on Juneau Access or in particular before I start throwing a few local questions out there you folks can suffer through?
Because you'll
have no idea what we're talking about.
First of all, over on Prince of Wales, Shelter Cove is one project, Thorn Bay to Kassan. How are those projects going?
The Thorn Bay to the Kassan is not a project of ours at this point in time. It's a project that's out there that the city of Thorn Bay has asked about. Indian Association of Kassan is doing something about. They're working with the BIA. There are some mixed messages as to whether all of the road from Control Lake to Kassan is being undertaken by the village of Kassan or not. At this point in time, Commissioner Van Shaven and I have discussed this road, the need to build this road, with the Military Assistance Program. And we have nominated it as one of the roads to look at for the Military Assistance Program. Because there has been no engineering done to date, because there has been no NEPA process to date, it is a road that is at least in using the Military Assistance Program at least 2 years off. But it is a road that I personally feel that falls into that road building program very well.
Is that the same program that they used in Metlakatla?
Yeah, the Walden, yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. That was the same program that built the Walden Point Road. The military has come back to the department. They want to continue their working relationship in the state of Alaska, but they want to also build shorter roads. They like to come in and build a road and leave in good faith much faster than they did in Metlakatla. So they've asked us to nominate roads that are shorter in length than that road.
And just briefly for the committee, is that it's kind of an on-the-job training for military road building?
Yes, sir. It's an on-the-job training for basically reservists in a lot of part and in full-time military. But it is all the services. It's all four branches of the military are involved in the road construction. Each one of them that has a civil engineering or a military engineering attribute is involved. It is usually a rotating basis of 2 weeks to a month that the military are there and for the total construction season.
And since we're talking about road building, something like Shelter Cove, and you've been around Southeast for a long time, in that model where we have a lot of existing road, logging road, that obviously is not up to the standard of the federal standards or basically any standards except for logging trucks, what does the department do specifically for Shelter Cove to hook us into all of that road? But are there other opportunities around to hook into existing logging roads that would ease the transition to getting people from here to there?
Yes, sir. The Cake Petersburg Road is a fine example of that. That's approximately 50 miles of roadway there, with approximately 40 miles of road already existing that are logging roads. It's not to the standard that the department normally builds to, but we would widen to that standard. The parts that are missing are parts that we would have to construct. At this point in time, the department is looking at GF. We're using general fund monies to look at reconstructing and constructing the road from Petersburg to Cake that will serve two purposes. It will access those two communities to each other, plus it will shorten the ferry routes for Southeast Alaska. It is an overall part of the Southeast Transportation Plan.
So it's fair to say that you've identified, obviously, these existing areas and are capitalizing on places like, again, Shelter Cove, where you could build 10 miles and gain access of 50 miles.
Yes, sir. In Shelter Cove, we thought we were going to have to build 11 miles of road to gain access to 50 miles of country. It turns out that it looks now, working with the Cape Fox Native Corporation, that we'll construct probably 9 miles of road and gain 50 miles of road overall, gain access to good resources for the Ketchikan area and the state of Alaska. So that is a project, as well as the Cape Petersburg project, that is ongoing at this point in time in the reconnaissance stages.
Good. And finally, before nobody else has any more questions, can you tell me about what's going on over on Gravina as far as the road building? I know when you take off, many of you have been in Sitka and Ketchikan over the session because of the weather, but you know, when you take off south out of the airport and you look down and you see how far the road has gone, and it's almost over to Bostwick now, are there plans to punch that all the way through to Bostwick? Will the public be able to use those roads eventually? When can my neighbor drive across the bridge and
why do you look at me?
And or take the ferry, realistically, today. Get over to Gravina and be able to drive out to Black Sands. And I mean, are those roads going to be open for the average citizen to use at some point?
Yes, sir. Those roads are to be open. Currently, we have one large road construction project on Gravina Island. That's Gravina Highway. And we have one airport project that has a segment of a road construction project on it. As most are aware, the Ketchikan International Airport is having a runway safety area constructed. With that runway safety area, we're constructing an underpass up below the runway to pass vehicles in. That will be a two-lane roadway underpass. We could not go around the runway with a roadway because of environmental reasons, so we the department elected to go under. That is a $10 million tube going underneath the roadway, and that tube is being constructed by a local southeastern contractor. That tube leads to, actually, we have it named two different roads. It will eventually be named one. The Lewis Reef Road, which goes to the north, that is constructed at this point in time, was constructed by a southeast Ketchikan contractor. And now the Gravina Highway, which is being constructed to the south, it's a design-build highway. It's part of Gravina Access, and that road is in its second year of construction. It will be completed this year as a gravel surface roadway. Upon completion of the roadway, they will be open for the public. The Gravina Highway Road had two purposes. One was the access to Ketchikan International Airport. The other was access to open new borough lands for development. So we are achieving that. With the Gravina Highway, the Lewis Reef Road constructed to the north was a narrower road than our normal standard. And the Gravina Highway was wider than our normal standard. So we balanced the two. Mr. Lowell, sitting behind me, is the resident engineer for these projects. We balanced the two and made the widths very similar for the whole roadway. The Lewis Reef Road, what we call Lewis Reef Road, goes more towards Bostwick, and that will enter the Department of Natural Resources and the Forest Service road system for Bostwick, as well as the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. I hope that answered your question.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Menzies, I'm not as conversant with the Ketchikan area as the chairman. Could you tell me, my understanding is that in connection with what I like to think of as the bridge to the future, the project that's not being built, there was some money spent on roadway on Gravina Island. And could you just tell me how much money and how much roadway we got?
When I said the Gravina, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dugan, when I said the Gravina Highway, that is the roadway that is being built with the Gravina Access dedicated road funds. We're building approximately 3.5 miles of road for $27 million. It's a design-build project. it has two bridges on it, and it's a roadway that the surfacing top will be approximately 36 to 40 feet tall. The road at this point in time is only being built to a D1 or a gravel surfacing, gravel paved surfacing. It will not be asphalted at this point in time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Nothing else for Mr. Menzies. We're going to be out of here early today. I appreciate you coming down, taking the time out to let folks from all over the state understand what's going on and the challenges down in our neck of the woods. And thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing else before the committee. We'll adjourn.